Good morning and welcome to OSW Daily. Thank you for joining us this morning. If this is your first time coming across the channel, I hope you find this useful. If you do, please consider subscribing. Hit that notification bell so you're alerted to each video that we stream. We stream 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. UK time. So if you find this useful, please do consider subscribing. So who are we? OSW is Open Source WordPress. We have a website, OSW, or opensourcewordpress.com. So please go over, take a look at the content over there. We have a lot of content that is all around work. And first and foremost, though, Open Source WordPress is a community all about sharing knowledge related to work. So we hope you find, again, this broadcast useful, and also the website. So who am I? I am the founder of Open Source WordPress. My name is Steve Todd. I'm also the global head of WordPress at NASDAQ. And today, what are we going to talk about? So let me pull up the slide. It's sort of going to give you an introduction and what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about a hybrid office. Could turn employees against each other, which is a very interesting perspective of what the hybrid office could be. Workplace is not a facility, it's a show. That's an interesting concept. And how often do you leave a virtual workshop or meeting feeling disengaged or unmotivated? So interesting topics. And who are we going to talk with this today? Today we're going to talk with Chris Dimming. Chris is a PhD. He is an anthropologist, an applied anthropologist. So welcome, Chris. Chris, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us again. Welcome back to the show.
I'm great, Steve. Thanks a lot for inviting me. I really appreciate it, and I'm excited to be here.
No, thank you, Matt. Thank you. And I actually, last time we talked, it sort of you opened my eyes to a whole different way to look at the workplace and different lens to look at through it. You brought through a whole lot of different frameworks, which I'm sure we'll touch on as we go through this. So I appreciate you giving us your time. So how have you been, and what have you been up to since we last spoke?
That's great. I mean, so I think just over the past month or so, I've been working on a white paper where I just discuss my frameworks and also discuss some methodologies that applied anthropology can actually bring to workplace strategies. So I'm looking forward to getting that out there and to bringing it into the discussions.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to reading it. You know, I'm fortunate we have these conversations. We have the conversations before and after, which is where we get, you know, a little more. I get a little more selfish, I guess, is one way to look at it. But it is really good to hear. And you know, I'm really, again, in the last video, folks, I encourage you to go and watch the last video. We're going to touch on some of the aspects of that again today. But there are some real interesting frameworks that Chris dives deeply into, which I think is worth going and watching. So, I mean, you're applied anthropologist. So I think it's worthwhile starting there and just like giving us a quick recap. What is an applied anthropologist and why does it matter for the workplace?
Sure. So an applied anthropologist is simply someone with anthropological training who practices outside academia. We appear in different forms. I think we're often seen in design research and user experience research. And the reason why is that we're often focusing on the people and sorts of the things they do every day and understanding the context in which they live in order to then figure out from there which products and services can be most suited for them. And that's all incorporated in part of the design thinking process, but also part of user experience research. And then to segue into workplace strategy and also our conversation today, the reason why it would be useful and relevant for workplace strategy is that applied anthropology brings sort of a methodology and a lens for understanding how workers actually experience the workplace. And so if you understand what workers are doing and what sort of tasks they're doing and what they need and their perspectives, then you can better understand what sort of workplace to design around them.
No, and it's fascinating, and again, like, you know, we've got some topics here that's really going to allow us to sort of dig into really understanding what that is. So, you know, you and I were kicking around some exchanges messages yesterday on, okay, what can we talk about today, and then one article just popped into my inbox, and it's why hybrid offices could turn employees against each other. And, you know, based on our last conversation, I just thought we both just jumped on this and said, this is perfect, right? And so, you know, what the article was sort of suggesting was, well, because of culture, because of competitiveness, because of career development and sort of what a hybrid workplace may present to people, therefore, it may turn employees against each other. So from your perspective, how do you, when you read a title like that, what sort of goes through your head when you sort of read that.
I'm just gonna scroll to the title. Let's see here.
It's why
Yeah, I
I'm.
really like how provocative it is. Why hybrid offices could turn employees against each other. I mean, I think it's very Forbes to the extent that they're trying to grab people, but I mean, I think it speaks to a couple of things. I mean, I think first it speaks to the need to have the kind of hybrid workplace that suits the people who'd be working in that company. So maybe it isn't the hybrid workplace itself that's turning employees against each other. Maybe it could be that implementation of a hybrid workplace. Maybe there are some processes and some spaces and features that don't really fit how the workers would actually be collaborating with each other. So that's one thing. And I think another thing that comes to mind is kind of related, and it's sort of this idea of the hybrid workplace or hybrid office being one thing. And I don't think so, because it could be multiples. It could be a physical space located downtown and working from home. It could be a bunch of decentralized flexible spaces and working from home. It could be sort of a combination of all of them, including something else that we haven't really thought of and that hasn't come to my mind yet. So, I mean, it's kind of a combination of different things. And so maybe the hybrid workplace of one setting could be inappropriate, but others it could actually work. And then I think the third thing that comes to mind is sort of related to the first, which is it may not necessarily be the structure that's causing the problems, as in the hybrid office itself, when it's implemented, may not be the thing that's causing the issues. But what could be causing problems would be sort of unintended consequences of the hybrid office's implementation, and then sort of cultural sort of issues within the company that are being accentuated as a result of the transformation to a hybrid office. I think a key part of the hybrid office would be collaboration and communication. But if there wasn't really a culture of collaboration that accentuated clear communication, then I imagine that if you go into a hybrid office setting where some people will be working remotely and some will be in the physical setting, and things will start to get really mixed up. And so I think that it's just very, I would say, important to keep in mind what sort of culture you have as a company before then going into what spaces are actually needed.
So, I mean, thank you. That there's three things, and you saw me scribbling notes as you're talking, as I sort of take different concepts here that you're sort of putting forward. So let's go back to the organizational impact, right? So the organization could be the what's driving the employees against the hybrid workplace. So how do organizations first make sure they don't do that?
As in, how do organizations make sure they don't drive people away through the hybrid workplace?
Yeah, against each other, right? So you think about it.
Against each other.
Because in essence, if you think about it, so why would how could an organization do this? To your point, unintentional consequence was the word you used, right? So in essence, you know, the hybrid workplaces, you know, are those people who are coming to the office, who are being visible, are they the ones who are getting the promotions, who are getting involved in projects and so on and so forth, right? Those are some of the unintended consequences, but actually it's some things that could drive wedges between employees. So it's the organizational culture around that, I think, could potentially be something.
Yeah. We could talk about that. There's actually a concept in anthropology called everyday diplomacy. And it's something I ran into during my PhD and just sort of emerged. I didn't really realize it would be relevant until I started thinking about workplace strategy. And essentially, the whole thing about everyday diplomacy is it's a constant negotiation of difference and a constant negotiation of sort of perceptions of difference. And so the way that it was used in anthropology is looking at a post-Ottoman context where you have people of different communities in somewhere like Greece, still, at least before the before Greek nationalism, still communicating with each other and still forming relationships with each other. There was a process of neighborliness and a process of neighborly kind of interactions. And these would be communities of Muslims, Greek Orthodox, and Jews just getting to actually sort of doing what they need to do while managing those sorts of any barriers that could exist in the form of religious identity. And the way that those barriers would often be negotiated would be through rituals. When you read into the literature of Bosnia, and during my field work in Kosovo, there is often the use of coffee as in an exchange of coffee to sort of build social cohesion, where the coffee itself going to someone's house for a coffee visit kind of symbolizes their recognition of you as a neighbor and also your recognition that you want to be in their space. And so if we take that concept of everyday diplomacy and translate it into the hybrid office, I think that if you have some people in the office and some people outside, it's going to be managing those differences. It's going to be managing maybe that identity of being the person who's at home versus being the one who's in the office. And I think that there are ways you could do that. I think you could, I know in the article it mentioned stand-ups and check-ins, but I think there are other ways that you can do it as well that kind of go beyond that very formal sort of meeting style of the agile stand-up versus the like the formal check-in. I think you could do even, there has been some talk about virtual coffees. I think that's a great idea as well. I think that sort of informal interactions that sort of create a culture of collaboration would be very good. I mean, I think also maybe collaboration exercises that are meant to facilitate and bring out sort of reactions to people across the board, not just in the office itself. I think that could be very useful. And I think that just focusing on those interactions and those exchanges and facilitating them could really be useful.
Yeah, I love the concept of informal rituals, right? Because when I talk to peers and I talk to, you know, people who I know who are working in different offices around the world, it's what are they missing about the workplace? And it is often those informal social rituals. It's, you know, it was having going for lunch with colleagues on a Friday. It was going for after work drinks with colleagues or within the networks that we all interact with, you know. It's those informal things that we're all missing and that we really want. So I think it is, I think it is a really good and interesting concept, the rituals, social rituals. And then you said about the physical environment, right? So yeah. How can the physical environment sort of create this or turn employees against each other, do you think? Or how should we look at it?
Well, I think I'll circle back to another concept in anthropology. It's called the gift. And it's from a guy named Marcel Mauss. And he wrote The Gift in the early 1920s. And it's one of the few books that has managed to stay relevant in anthropology since then. And the central idea is that you can provide something to others, and that in turn facilitates social cohesion. And so by his example was taking the example of a potlatch ritual where people in Native American sort of settings would go to a ceremony, the potlatch, where everyone is bringing food together. And by going there, and then you get the sort of the gift of the food that the host provides, but then you may also bring something too, and sort of that sort of exchange is what facilitates social cohesion. And the reason why is because the gift has symbolic meanings associated with togetherness, but it's still very much focused on the physical environment. And I think if you look back at back to everyday diplomacy, a lot of those rituals were taking place within the context of a physical environment, like the neighborhood. And so I think if you translate that into the actual workplace, I think that what that could look like would be more of a facilitation of the informal aspects. And maybe not just coffee lounges, but maybe also cafes, maybe also the ability or the sort of, maybe there's an allowance for coffee that you would then provide, that you could then provide to other people as sort of a way of actually sharing, because that's what it's supposed to be about. And so the physical workplace within that setting, I think that facilitating rituals like that could be very useful. I think the challenge, of course, then goes into what to do about the people who are working from home. And so you somehow have to translate those rituals to those who are working from home too.
Yeah, no, and that is the one of the biggest challenges, right? So today everyone's working in the same environment. There's very few people in the office. Everyone's at home. Everyone feels parity, right? And that shift, whenever people do go into the office, I think that's where it's going to be really interesting. And I think, I don't want to sort of say what sort of is this definitively. This is what I think. But in essence, it's kind of like I think whenever organizations, I said I don't want to say what I think, and then I started with I think, but anyway, there you go, there you go. So it's sort of, I think the organizations or the teams that organize themselves so that they take care of those social activities when everyone is in the office, and then they structure the office for those that want to come in those off days. So the days where the team is split, some people are working from home, some people are in the office. Those are days that are dedicated more for a heads down work, and structure the weeks around that so that they can both everyone can leverage and take benefit of the time when they are together, whether there is social interactions when everyone's at home or social interactions when everyone's in the office, and manage those things.
I think that makes a lot of sense, is that you the office itself becomes more geared towards collaboration rather than the rather than focus, which is going to put more pressure on the workplace experience, I think, because the offices are going to need to be able to actually facilitate and be shown to facilitate collaboration. Otherwise, they may not be they may not be used.
No, absolutely. And sort of then you take it, right? You sort of flip the concept of, and that's where sort of I thought the another headline that I saw, I thought dovetailed nicely into this. And we're just going to use it as a jumping off point. So we're going to have to go through the actual article itself. But the workplace is not a facility, it's a show, right? It takes the whole concept. So you take what you just said and you think about it as a show, right? And it's almost like you go to Disneyland or Disney World and it is a show. You walk in, everyone working there is on a platform, on a stage, and they're there to curate the experience for everyone who's going through that park. And I think sort of taking that lens and looking at the workplace from that perspective, right? It's not here, we're just here to sort of facilitate. We're here to put on a show.
I think that really dovetails nicely as well with a lot of sort of with this idea of the front stage and the backstage. This is from Irving Goffman, who wrote The Presentation of the Self back in the 50s and 60s. I had to forget the exact time he wrote it, but he has this idea of the front stage and the backstage, and it's sort of this concept of the social drama, where the front stage is the image that you put in front of others for other people to see, and the backstage is everything you do in order to create that image. And I think if you look at the workplace as a show, I think that on for much of it, I mean, I think that the side that the employees see is definitely would definitely be a show where everyone within the physical workplace would be geared towards curating an experience for the employees who come in. And so it's really a part of that journey. It's a part of managing the process from entering the door through any temperature checks, through going to where they're actually working, to the collaboration settings they take part in, because I imagine that all of that would be curated in some way. I mean, just due to the necessity of having to manage social distancing. And so I think a lot of that sort of thing to work through in terms of really figuring out the experience from entering the door to working together to then leaving is very important. But then I think it's also important to keep in mind that the employees are also taking part in the show, and they're sort of making a show in front of others. It's kind of like a collective performance, if you will, rather than just one coming directly from the facilities management and the workplace itself. And I think that a thing to keep in mind would then to be what sort of culture is being produced by that performance. What is it that employees are showing to others, and why are they actually doing that? What sort of symbols are they drawing upon? What's what are they saying about your brand through how they're interacting? So I think that there's a lot there to consider.
And when I read that headline, all I went back to was where you talked about anthropology is user experience research, right? And basically evaluating that and how you basically, well, anthropologists are used often with software development and so on and so forth, right? Because they can look at that user experience. So looking at the user experience lens in putting on that show, how can sort of practitioners think about design concepts or that curation, right? So we want you to walk and navigate this way to go get your coffee because we want you to collaborate and bump into other people.
Okay. I think a key concept, first of all, is that all this often focuses on the perspective of the person as a user. I use that sort of term in quotes because people are not just users, they're people who are doing, they're taking part in a service or good as part of something they're doing at the time. And so in this case, the user you're thinking about would be the worker who would be using the physical workspace, but then also all the other collaboration tools that you are providing for them. So what a anthropologist would do in this case would be to think more about and then to observe how the employee is going about their work, how they're interacting with their colleagues. They would probe how the employee views collaboration, and they would consider what it is that what pain points the employee has for the services that the organization is providing, whether in terms of the collaboration software they're using. Maybe they Slack isn't really working well as a collaboration tool, for example. Maybe they need something else like Jira for collaborating, perhaps. Maybe not. Maybe there's something completely different. Maybe that there's an element of, again, informal interactions that the employee's missing that they would like to have provided somehow. And then if you look in the physical workspace, maybe after having been at home, maybe that there's some elements that the employee wishes were they were there. Maybe that they wish that rather than the workspace itself being designed in still very much of a pre-COVID way, in terms of maybe like an open office environment, maybe they would wish for something a bit more intimate. And so I think that there's a lot of those things we're maybe looking for first from the employee's perspective. But then once you do that, then you start to think about the journey. And so there's this concept called the journey map in user experience research, where what you do is you observe how the employee is going through the day. So if they're working at home and also working in the physical office throughout the working at home and other days they're at the physical office, then what you could do is you could observe them remotely and also in the physical office through means like principal observation, which isn't monitoring keystrokes or anything, but could be something as simple as doing remote interviews. It could be doing something like a netnography, if you will, which is basically sort of observations participating over virtual platforms. So when they're at home, and then when they are in the physical workplace, then it's possible for you to just sit and watch how they're interacting and also participate with them. So you could work on your stuff within the same space as them as well. And what you can do from that is you're not just sort of taking notes for the sake of it. You're taking notes in order to understand their journey throughout the day. So what are they doing on Monday? What are they doing on Tuesday? How is this person using the environment that they're in from Monday through Friday? How do they travel through those different contexts? And what do their interactions with their colleagues look like? And all of that is part of the journey. And so if you sort of understand the journey map, then you can start to think about what obstacles and pain points and blocks does the employee come into contact with as they're using your services. But it really involves thinking not just for this to work, it involves thinking not just about the physical workspace, but also about the organizational culture and the collaboration processes that are happening. So in a sense, you become more like a management consultant. And I think a lot of workplace strategists would see themselves that way too. But I think that looking at it this way would really be a matter of bridging both the organizational and the physical, but through the perspective of a design process like those found through user experience research.
No, and I love the concept of journey mapping, and often it's people can call it a day in the life of. So what is the user experience as they walk through the space, how they interact with the space, and who do they interact with, right? Because as you're talking about that journey mapping, I'm almost thinking you add another layer, which is your network analysis, the social connections that people have, so you truly understand who's connecting, whether it's in a virtual world or whether it's in the physical world, and then how do you interact those two to actually optimize for everybody?
I mean, I think what social network analysis does is it gives you a concrete picture of interactions. And I guess just to sort of backtrack and explain what it is. So social network analysis is a method that's used to visualize interpersonal relationships. And so if we're looking at a company, each person within that company is a single node within the network, but the interactions they have with others, those would be those who represent an edge within the network. It represents a tie. So if we're looking at this company and then we're thinking, we're qualifying an interaction as being perhaps going to the same meeting, then you and I can be connected through going to a collaboration stand-up on Mondays and Tuesdays. And other people would be connected to the same thing or going to different meetings. And so the network itself is then visualized as part of those different things that are going on. And then what that does is that gives you more of a systemic picture of interactions that nicely complements the sort of qualitative information that you're getting from user experience research.
Yeah. Oh man. It's just every time I talk to you, Chris, I just feel my knowledge is going deeper and wider, and just all these different concepts and all these different frameworks that you're providing and illustrating is really, really helpful. So obviously our time is coming to an end. I just want to touch base with you. Is there anything else you want to add to the conversation just before we wrap things up?
Well, I just think that what the sort of the article speaks to me about is the importance of stepping back and looking at the context of the organization first, and the context of how people are collaborating and how people are working before then implementing a hybrid workplace environment. I think the failure to do that is what would lead to headlines like Forbes's Why Open Hybrid Offices Could Turn Employees Against Each Other.
Well, then you would turn it into a why hybrid offices actually optimize for employees to bring to work together, right? Because then you're, to
That's
your point,
a
right?
Possibility.
That is a real possibility.
Looking at it from the person's perspective.
Yeah, but we all know, you know, Chris, would we be talking about it if that was the case? Because that's just, we'd all just say that's just pie in the sky, you know. But yeah, no, it's so true. It's so true. Look, as always, it's really good to chat with you. It's really good to see you. How can folks reach you and find you, Chris?
Sure. So I can be found on LinkedIn just through my name, which would be Chris Dimming, comma PhD.
We'll put a link as well.
Just find me through LinkedIn or through my email address, which is chris.dimming@gmail.com.
Or I guess they could watch an IFMA presentation on YouTube and just see your name everywhere over that, right? So that's a little inside joke for those who did watch the recent IFMA presentation on YouTube. Chris was asking some great questions. So Chris, look, thank you. I appreciate it. It's always great to connect. It's always great to chat. And I look forward to speaking to you very soon.
You too, Steve. Thanks a lot for inviting me. I look forward to the next conversation.
Great, man. All right. Have a great day and enjoy the rest of the week.
Great. Thanks. You too.